I might just get my kidney from a pig.
How would you feel as an artist, as a writer, if someone said that they were using something that you wrote, one of those children's plays that you wrote, to torture prisoners?
He was not sworn in to protect the American people. He was sworn in to protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution. Baby, check this out. I've got something to say. And it's so loud in here. When they stop the drum machine and I can think again.
Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. I'm the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Max.
And we are here, episode number 74 of the award-winning podcast of record, Countless Screaming Argonauts. How are you, Max?
I'm fine. What award did we win?
I don't know. It was a self-promoted award, I believe. I think for funniest 5 minutes ever on the internet.
Oh. The TFABP Award of Excellence?
Right. For the funniest 5 minutes for our pet, not pet segment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I was there for the ceremony.
Right. Well, I can tell you who we won against. We were up against Joe the Plumber, who said, "I think the media should be abolished from reporting on the wars."
Yeah.
Which I thought was just a fabulous idea. Fabulous idea. What an idiot.
Where do you start? Don't you think we need to hear more from Joe the Plumber?
I think his 15 minutes was over like 15 minutes ago, personally.
Oh, yeah, about, you know, a month ago.
When I saw that thing in the paper, when I saw this article in the paper, I could not help but think of that part in Jurassic Park, the movie, where
the guy gets eaten by a dinosaur?
No, that too. But where Malcolm was talking about why you shouldn't have cloned the dinosaur DNA, because he said that the scientists hadn't earned that right. They were just simply following, you know, following
the pattern.
By the numbers. Do
yeah.
this, do this, do this.
Right.
So what I want to know is, what gives Joe the Plumber the right to be a journalist?
Well,
he's a freaking plumber.
The thing
what
is
gives him the right to pose as a journalist?
He's not a plumber.
Right, well...
He's not even a Joe.
Right.
He's not even a Republican.
Right.
So, if ever
so, well,
there
it kind of fits, then. Exactly.
He's not a journalist
he's
either.
He's not a reporter either, right, so...
Yes, there is no authority less authoritative than Joe the Plumber.
Right.
The award-winning Countless Screaming Argonauts is by far more interesting and representative and worth listening to than Joe the Plumber. But why don't you
Absolutely.
Tell the people what Joe the Plumber said about reporting on war?
Well, basically he said, well, first of all, you have to be, I don't know who you have to be to understand what he was saying. Because I've read it like 12 times and I still don't get it.
You know, I did go back and reread the quotes myself because I wondered if I missed something too.
Right. No. He said, "I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed near a war."
All right. Let me interrupt you. If we concede that he's a journalist, he's shooting himself in the foot.
Of course. Of course. And then he goes on to say, I mean, you guys report where our troops are at. You report what's happening day to day. You make a big deal out of it. I think it's asinine, you know? I liked it back in World War I and World War II when he wasn't there.
Right.
When you go to the theater and you'd see your troops on, you know, the screen, and everyone would be real excited and happy for them. Yeah, I was just thinking the other day, I was real happy to see that news report where those soldiers got shot and blown up.
There is so much
really
wrong
happy.
With that that you just don't know where to start.
I'm really happy for him.
I'm really happy for him is the kicker. But I liked it back in World War I and World War II, like you said.
Right.
He wasn't
like
there.
Like he was there. Like he was there,
and,
right.
And which of the two world wars did you like better, Joe?
And then he follows it up. I think media should be abolished from, you know, reporting. Isn't that what media is supposed to do? You know, war is hell. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the whole story behind it half the time. So I think the media should have no business in it. Huh?
So if you're the media, which you're not, what business is it of yours? Which, of right. course, it isn't. And why are you running it down? It's the most absurd bit of shit I have ever heard from anyone who's had a microphone stuck in front of their face.
I know. It was great. That's why I couldn't resist putting it in the opening of the podcast.
Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. The whole thing is bizarre.
And, you know, they were on the screen. Which is somehow different from a television screen because it's a movie screen.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I think what he's trying to say behind it is that he thinks in World War I and World War II, the only things that were shown were things that benefited the soldiers of America.
Right. I think there's a word for that. Propaganda.
Propaganda, exactly. It's jingoism.
Right.
It's counter to everything that a journalist, any self-respecting journalist, wants to be or would be. He is so manifestly stupid and such an impeccable, unbelievable fraud.
Right.
That.
Oh, I agree. You don't have to, you're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, I'm done with him.
Yeah. I also think that part of what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
And God knows, I'm not interpreting for him because nobody could.
Well, you have to interpret for him because what he says doesn't make any sense.
Right. I think what he was trying to say is, I know that during the Korean War for the first time, there were journalists who were embedded with the troops. And I know that there were some questions raised at times about whether having journalists in that sort of immediacy contributed to, like,
the danger that the troops were facing.
Right. And I know that it came up a lot in more recent American conflicts. And as a matter of fact, there was a journalist whose name is escaping me right now who was seriously injured.
Mm-hmm.
There have been journalists who have been killed covering, you know, covering the war. But I'm not sure if that was what he was trying to say or if he was talking about the fact that if the journalist is there saying the troops are here on the corner of South and Main, and then the enemy would get that broadcast and know to send their tanks over to South and Main.
That's part of what he's aiming at, I'm sure.
Right.
And the interesting thing about that, it says he was reporting for the conservative website PJTV, but do you know which reporter was sent away from the front by the American troops for giving too much information out?
I do. It was Geraldo Rivera.
It was Geraldo Rivera for Fox News.
Yeah. Right. For giving away too much information.
Right. Yes, anybody who is a self-respecting American journalist is not going to say anything that's going to endanger his own troops. But the American people have a right to know what's going on in wars they are involved in. And let's
right.
face it, all Americans are involved in wars America is involved in.
Sure.
So to say that we shouldn't cover the war is
idiotic at best.
Yeah, it's saying that the president should do whatever he wants and no one should question it.
Oh, but that's what our current president says.
Right.
which kind of fits the whole thing.
Which means that Joe Wurzelbacher is on the same intellectual level as George W. Bush.
And we all know what intellectual level
that
is.
I think I've effectively insulted them both.
I think so. Not bad. Not a bad, sort of like the 7-10 split. You got
I
both
think
of them.
I picked it up.
I think you did
all
too.
Right.
Hey, listen, I got another one to
Hit
go
me.
On to. All right, this is about the divorce and the kidney transplant,
it's very
which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you had turned me on to the book Freakonomics.
Right.
And in following up on having read that book, I started reading their blog on the New York Times
webpage.
And every day, they both, probably three times a week, each of the two writers write something. But they also invite other people to write in, different stories and stuff. And, right. and they're always very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, this is one that a guy wrote about. And I just want to read, it's just a short clip.
Yep, go.
Because I think it opens up an interesting conversation. Okay, so this doctor's wife's health is failing, and so is their marriage. So to save them both, he offers to be the kidney donor for his wife. She recovers, but the marriage doesn't. A few years later, she files for divorce. The husband turns around and says he wants his kidney back.
Yeah.
If he can't have it, he wants $1.5 million, the estimated worth of the organ.
Yeah.
Now, the blogger goes on to say that medical ethicists say that he's unlikely to get either, as it is illegal to exchange money for organs. The law is very clear, and also clear that once you give a gift, you can't take it back.
Right.
So he's not going to win. But he raises the issue of, what are we going to do 10 or 20 years from now when transplants are, are much more common, are much safer, et cetera, et cetera. And does this indicate that a market in donated organs would become acceptable?
Well,
and so it raises lots and lots of really interesting issues.
You know what? The more I think about this, the more I think it's pretty straightforward. I think the answer is no.
Right.
You know, ethically, if you give me something, it's mine. Doesn't
right.
matter whether it's a spare tire or a kidney. You can't say, here's my favorite gold watch. Oh, and now that you're feeling better, I want my watch back.
Right.
Ownership transferred legally. He's got nothing. But I think, and this is something that our friend Brian used to talk about, in the future, the growing of organs on and in animals for replacement in humans is increasingly likely. And I'm
right.
not even sure that this is going to be that dynamic of an issue. You say maybe 10 to 15 years, but 100 years from now, this whole question might be passé. I might just get my kidney from a pig.
Right. But then again, that raises a whole secondary...
Oh, about the ethics of...
ethics issue.
Using...
The ethics of animal...
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, there are people who... There are people who don't eat meat because you kill the animal. There are people who don't, use leather because you kill the animal and stuff
True.
Like that. I mean, how are you going to feel about killing a pig to harvest the kidneys?
Do you realize how many pig heart valves are being implanted in humans right now?
Sure. Oh, I do. I do know that.
There's a significantly loud group of a very small number of people who call themselves PETA.
PETA, yep.
Who object to this. But as long as the humans are controlling the circumstance, I don't think the humans in PETA are going to prevail in that kind of a question.
Right.
They've already handled it in South Park. They grew Mrs. what's her name's penis on a pig, or I'm sorry, on a mouse. they handle all sorts of religious and ethical questions on South Park. And
sure.
In South Park, it's okay. So... I don't know. I think that's all you need to say about it is it's been in South Park.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as that.
No.
Because if... I'm sure that it has to do, it has to do with divorce in general. But in divorce
right.
in general, you start dividing up the property. And if the husband gave the wife a diamond ring,
yeah.
he can't demand that he get it back. But when you start figuring out the values of splitting the property, that gets included.
Well, here's one thing that I think I know about divorce law in some states, and it's different in each state. What you bring into the marriage before you were married is yours, and what was grabbed by the marriage, for lack of a better verb,
right,
as the marriage is underway, belongs to both.
Okay, well, that kidney came with that guy.
That's right. So by divorce law, he would have a claim on it.
Right. Now, I'm not saying that he could demand it back, because obviously that's a problem.
And he can't demand payment
right
successfully.
So when you start divvying up the property, if it's a state where it's equal property, you have to count that kidney as part of the property, do you not?
I don't think so, no.
No?
No. But it's a fair point, because he did have it exclusively.
Right.
Before the marriage.
For how many years? Sure.
Right. Right. And so you're saying if the total value of the marriage was $1.5 million.
Right.
He gets $1.5 million and she gets nothing but his kidney.
Right. But it wouldn't be, it wouldn't come out that way. I mean, you know, I think.
Although that would be an equitable distribution under strictly the laws of equity.
Sure. Sure. And I don't know how you set the value of the kidney.
Well,
by
common market standards. Oh, wait, there is no legal market.
Right,
you can't
right.
buy and sell
so
organs.
Can't, so you're going to have to, first, you're going to have to argue how much that kidney is worth.
Do you know what this makes me think of? Shakespeare, The Merchant of Venice.
Right.
Sure, you can have the kidney, just don't take any of her blood.
Right. So it's an interesting. I think it's an interesting question, and like I said, I didn't think it was as cut and dry.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, but I don't see any way he can gain anything other than the
right.
positive feeling that he saved someone's life.
Sure, sure. What? Okay, onward and upward.
Onward and upward. Did we ever go upward with this? We just kind of go
Well,
on.
We always try, but it doesn't always work out that way. Now, this is a story that's a little bit older. This is from several weeks ago, but I liked it because I wanted to ask you about an opinion. And this is about the musicians protesting the use of their songs by the jailers at Guantanamo Bay for the torture.
Yeah.
Okay, or as I know, the government says they didn't torture, for their auditory assault.
Yeah.
Basically, okay, they were at Guantanamo. They were playing for 20 hours a day. They were playing things like AC/DC, Queen, and other, you know.
Heavy metal.
Horribly, horribly heavy metal rock band music.
And the Barney song.
Right, in order to disorient the detainees, I guess, essentially.
No,
plus,
it's not disorient. That's too soft a word. It was to distress them.
Right, because they're not allowed to listen to rock music in their country. And
not only that, but it's loud. It's an assault on their ears, and it's against their will. And
they listened to Eminem, Slim Shady, and Dr. Dre for 20 straight days. I mean, that's enough for me to admit that I had shot President Kennedy at this point. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that's a really important point. I
sure.
agree with you. I'd do the same thing. Yeah, I was there in Dallas. Absolutely. Just make it
please
stop.
Please stop the music. Yes,
you know,
please.
If you're saying to your jailer, to your captor, I'll sign anything, I'll say anything, just make it stop.
Right.
You've been tortured.
Right.
And by the
right.
way, they were sitting them on the floor, chaining their hands and feet to a ring mounted in the floor.
So they couldn't.
So that they were physically uncomfortable for hours at a time, and
right.
they were underdressed in a cold room, or naked. That's torture, kids.
Right. Oh, I agree. One of the guys said it. He said he was released from Guantanamo after 97 days, and he says 2 years later he still keeps his house very quiet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So the question I had about this is I'm you know, obviously I'm not taking a pro torture stand. That's not my point in bringing this whole thing up.
I think you should. I want to hear bold talk from the Fabulous Penguin.
But what I wanted to what I was wondering about was the artist's integrity. I mean, it's one thing to say, if you're an artist, it's one thing to say that I don't want my song to be part of the presidential campaign.
Right.
You can't use my song that way.
Right.
However, if these individual soldiers purchase the music legally.
Right.
Is it not their right to use it any way that they feel they want to?
Yeah.
You know? And is this any different, or how different, let me see, because it is different, but how different is this than if you had a neighbor who was playing loud music all the time and you had called the cops 5, 10, 15, 20 times to complain, and the guy continued, you know, you're living in an apartment building and the guy upstairs is continuing to, you know, to do the same
right.
thing. Is it real different from that?
Well,
and I was just thinking of you as a writer. I know that you've written a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, how would you feel as an artist, as a writer, if someone said that they were using something that you wrote, one of those children's plays that
right.
you wrote, to torture prisoners, you know, or you know, make them listen to Max's play
right.
20 times?
How Niedermeyer McFarlane regained his lost treasure for 20 days in
right.
a row? Yeah, that would pretty much drive any adult nuts, and probably most of the kids.
Right.
Well, yeah, I would be personally offended. As long as I got my royalties, I don't think that I would have a legal beef.
Right.
But look at it another way. Suppose the guy has been tortured by listening to Slim Shady. Now, he gets out, and he goes out and he shoots Eminem.
Right.
Isn't he more likely to want to shoot the guy that put the record on?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe not.
At that point, isn't that sort of like Patty Hearst? You know, she kind of...
Yeah, the Stockholm syndrome.
You know, she right, yeah. So she's not the person who's playing the music, but rather the person
maybe,
who created
maybe
it.
Maybe that's possible. That would be pretty funny if... And, of course, we all want to get
right.
rid of Barney, so.
So you just play Barney's
well,
song over
that was
and
one
over
of the
and
things
over
they used
and over
to
again.
To these people at Guantanamo Bay.
Yes, I had heard that. So, you know.
You know, I want to.
That was the guy, Christopher Sir.
Yeah.
Who started the lawsuit.
The Barney guy?
Yeah. I'm not. No, Christopher Sir was Sesame Street. Bob Singleton is the one who wrote the Barney song.
All right. Well, I wanted to take this to a political discussion, which is
sure.
George Bush is now in the process of trying to remake his legacy. He's on every Republican Fox right-wing TV show and radio show talking about how he would do it all again the same, and, you know, he was a decider and he was decisive and all this horseshit.
And it's bullshit. Every single word that comes out of his mouth is bullshit.
Well, that gets me to an interesting philosophical question about lying. He believes what he's saying.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
If you say something that's bullshit and you believe it, are you lying?
Well, we're leaving the pool of politics and getting into the pool of philosophy, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And I did want to make a political point that George Bush specifically stated on countless occasions, I certainly can't count them, the United States does not torture. And it is an abject fact that we did torture. It's
right.
been proven. And the thing about this administration is they constantly and continually just deny reality. And if you say it often enough, we do not torture, we do not torture, we do not torture, some people will believe it. I want to say,
right.
for the record, the United States did torture. I think it's bad for the United States to even have that as a possibility. Morally, I think, and this is a risky thing to say, I think our moral superiority, our moral clarity, our moral goodness is more important than our safety.
Well, I think we stained that.
And I think
this last 8 years.
He brutalized that moral clarity, yeah, and that moral superiority. And the damage that that did is greater, although it obviously was great, than the attack itself on September 11th. And I think we're experiencing, yeah, revisionist history at the moment in the flesh. And I'm opposed to it. And I just want to say we tortured. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I saw a thing yesterday on TV, on Countdown, yeah, that said that Obama has said privately that the very first thing that he's going to do as president is close Gitmo.
Right.
That will be closed within the first week of him taking office.
First executive order is going to be to close,
right,
Gitmo.
Which I think is a basically a statement that, you know, this is not your dad's president.
Right. We're going to try to reestablish some moral authority as the United States. And it may put us at slightly greater risk. But my second thought that I'd like to express is that this thing should ever have been determined to be a crime. It was an organized crime by a rich and organized group of a relatively small number of individuals. And we should never have called it a war. It's not a war. We should have captured people, arrested them, and tried them according to the laws of this nation and the world. As long as we consider ourselves in a war against something as nebulous as terror, we can't possibly win, and they can continually extend it. We should use racketeering statutes, the FBI, the CIA, and everyone else. We should spy. I don't care if we assassinate people that we know for an absolute certainty, and I know it's going to ruin my moral clarity argument, but let's face it, everybody's willing to take out Bin Laden if we see him, that we should establish our moral superiority and arrest him, throw him in jail, bring a case, make a RICO case, make a tax evasion case, make some kind of a case, put the bastard in jail, put it up to the American citizens as jurors to see if we want to execute this guy. Forget assassination. Let's put it back in the courts. It was a criminal act. It was a huge criminal act, but it was never a state action, and we can only go to war with states. Sorry, I've ranted.
Right. No, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense, and that certainly would have been a much better way, I think, of dealing with it.
But
rather than the way that we did.
Yeah, I think we took a simplistic, easy approach. You know, just round everybody up and lock them away forever. That's going to make us safer. He likes to talk about how we're safer since September 11th, which, of course, negates the fact that he was president on September 11th.
Right. He was also president when the first attack.
No. 1993, the first attack on the World Trade Center. And that was Clinton's watch, and you can certainly, you know, lay that on Clinton's doorstep.
Right.
But this guy had plenty of warnings, including the August 6th presidential daily briefing that said Bin Laden intending to attack inside the United States. Pretty clear. And he went on vacation, which he did more than every other president ever. I just don't want Americans to accept the idea that this guy's putting out there that he is in any way a good president. He's damaged our Constitution, and that can't be as bad as anything else. He was not sworn in to protect the American people. He was sworn in to protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution.
Right, which he did not do.
He didn't do it.
He skewered it.
And yes, we have not had any attacks. But you know what? If you killed every Muslim in the world, we probably wouldn't have any Muslim attacks on the United States either. But there would be no moral authority for doing that. It's all a question of where you draw the line.
Sure. I agree.
So,
I agree.
So by the way, musicians have been protesting their use of songs as torture in Guantanamo prison. I suppose we should get back to that.
Well, I think we kind of covered it. Right. You know, I guess the real question that I had is that if you purchased, a lot of times you and I in the podcast kind of take a skewered view of things.
like
with that T-shirt,
yeah.
You know, in school thing and stuff like that. And to me, this is one of those issues. If this and you know, you'd have to establish the fact that they bought the music legally.
Yes.
If they bought that music legally, right. Is it not their right to use it in that
fashion? Oh, yeah. Yeah, to that point, I agree that it is. If you're saying that point, I agree with you.
Right.
If you come over to my house and I bought the new Eminem record and I play it for you, I say, listen to this. Do I have a legal right to do it? Hell yeah,
absolutely.
I do. Suppose I play it for you again. Still legal. Suppose I play it 20 times. If you're still there, it's still legal. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they have the legal right. They own the playment rights.
I mean, isn't that what all piracy, music piracy and stuff was all
right.
about?
Right. Well, and there's also, I think it's been established when people were making cassette tapes that you had the right to copy it and give it to your friend, which is a much more invasive, pervasive use of it than, you know, playing
it. And I think that was my point with the whole thing about the politicians using it. You know, it's one thing to purchase the music legally and listen to it and have other people listen to it with you. It's another thing to use the music to represent you. And I think that in that circumstance, I think it's okay for a musician to say.
Oh, it's certainly okay for them to bitch about
music.
It. But I don't think they have any legal cause of action.
Yeah, I think that they might.
Well,
let's
take
it
to fair use. Suppose they only played 30 seconds of Eminem, but they played it for 20 hours in a row. That may be even more torturous than if you play the whole song or a whole CD.
Right. Special nod to our friends at They Might Be Giants.
Exactly what I was thinking. Thank you, guys. We love
for what
you.
We do at the beginning and
that's
end
right.
of every show.
But hopefully we're not torturing anyone with our... In fact, that may be the only listenable part of our podcast. It's that They Might Be Giants.
For a lot of people, it might be.
The rest of our listeners are countless screaming Argonauts.
Right. So listen, I do have to tell you, I have a countless screaming Argonauts story.
Please.
From my vacation. And I also wanted to ask you if you had read in the notes, did you read that blog entry about the buying the monkeys and the Wall Street bailout plan? Did you follow that?
I did read
it. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Did you like that? Did you think that was interesting?
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about just, you know, explain it. Because that was the best explanation of the Wall Street buyout that I've seen.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear it again. So read it or tell it to
all right, well, I'll do that. Let me just tell you a quick Countless Screaming Argonauts story.
All right.
When we're on the cruise, I told you, I mentioned to you yesterday in our conversation that we entered into several trivia contests.
Right.
And one of the things that they really stressed was they liked creative names for the teams.
Right.
And so we actually kicked around because there were three of the four members of 8-Beer Sampler Productions there. We seriously considered calling ourselves 8-Beer Sampler.
Oh, you should have.
But then we thought that people wouldn't understand that, so instead we called ourselves Countless Screaming Argonauts.
Well, and that's fine.
Right, and what was interesting about it was that the woman who was running the trivia contest several times was from Canada. And she naturally assumed that we were fans of the Toronto... No, of the Toronto Argonauts.
Oh.
Was it Toronto? the Canadian football team. The Argonauts. She assumed that we were fans of theirs and made a couple of comments about, you know, good to see some Canadian football fans here at the, yeah. you know, at
and
the
And you just
trivia
tell her
contest.
Afterwards you're totally on the wrong track?
No, we didn't, but I sort of wish that we had.
You didn't bother to explain
to her? I sort of wish that we called ourselves We Might Be Giants just to see if anybody caught the music yeah. reference. But
well, you're a pretty big guy. They might have missed it.
Right, right. So anyway, let me talk about this bailout thing. As everybody knows, I mean, this has been like the news for the last 6 months. You know, we have this $700 billion bailout plan, and you know, people are, whether or not there's enough watching it, and who's getting what, and what the banks are doing with the money, and, you know, on and on and on, and we can give it to the banks, but we can't give it to the automakers, and all this other stuff. And to me, it's just been so really difficult to understand how this bailout yeah. plan works. And I ran across this blog where this guy writes this story. And for the first time, I understood how the bailout plan worked. And I thought it was really cute. So
well,
I wanted
to just
read it.
It's very interesting. I'm not sure it accurately explains it, but it's worth bringing out.
From my perspective, it does, because I didn't understand it before. And now I think I understand at least a little bit.
Explain to the people.
All right. So this is what the guy writes. He says, once upon a time, a man appears in a village and announces to the villagers that he would buy monkeys for $10 each. The villagers, seeing that there were many monkeys all around, went out in the forest and started catching them. And the man bought thousands of them at $10 each. But then the supply started to diminish and the villagers stopped their effort. So he then announced that he would buy monkeys at $20 a piece. So this renewed their efforts. They all ran out and started catching monkeys again, but then the supply starts to diminish. It gets harder to catch them, and they stop going out. So he announces that he'll give them $25 each for each monkey. But now it's getting hard to find monkeys, let alone catch them.
$25.
Right. So he says, well, listen, I'll give you $50 for every monkey. However, I have to go into the city on some business. So I'm going to leave my assistant here who's going to buy the monkeys on my behalf. So the guy leaves. And the assistant turns to the villagers and says, look, I got this great idea. We got all these monkeys in this big cage, and the man has already collected for the man, and he's paid you for them. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell you the monkeys back at $35 a piece. And then when the guy comes back, you can sell them to him for $50 a piece and make 15 bucks a month.
Sounds like a good idea.
So the villagers, and so I'm going to read the last two lines. The villagers rounded up all their savings and bought all the monkeys for $700 billion. They never saw the man or his assistant again, only yep. lots and lots of monkeys. And so now you have an understanding how the bailout plan works. And, you know, I thought it was a classic. I mean, it's the shell game.
Well,
is what this
and
is.
It's true. The underneath it all is this thing called credit default swaps, which are
right.
basically insurance against somebody's default on their mortgage, but there's more
right.
insurances by factors of hundreds. Or thousands than there are mortgages.
Right.
And
that's the difference between the $25
right.
monkey and
that
the
$50
monkey.
That and the fact that the monkeys are now only worth $5 a piece anyway.
Right.
right.
They never
the,
were
the
worth more than that.
All these mortgages that
but
are backing
all
these securities are worth less and less every day.
Right.
And the fact that
Absolutely.
They're worth less makes them worth less. Which makes them worth less, which makes them...
Right. And the fact that people
right.
know that they're worth
right.
less makes them worth
right.
even lesser. Lesser.
But
more or less.
You know, the more I think about this, the people who say we should have given the money to the people to prop up the value of the homes that were underlying the securities, the more I think that they
would
might
have
had the
idea,
answer.
Don't you think? They would have been able to write off some of that mortgage money. If you had a mortgage of $200,000, but the house is only worth $170,000, You could have given them $30,000 right. to write the mortgage. You know, get it more in line with what the property was worth, and then you basically would be starting
even
back
then,
at zero.
It
would have been a much better idea.
If you guarantee that the property is worth $170,000, you make them take a $30,000 loss, at least the losses in the value of the property stop. You know, by now the house is worth $100,000
right.
and half of the value is gone. But, you know...
Right. And the banks have
right.
these houses
and,
that they can't do anything with.
Our Congress, in its infinite wisdom, gave the first half of the $700 billion to the banks without demanding that they relend it.
Right.
And they kept
they
the money.
They went out and bought Chinese banks. And...
Yeah.
Right.
So they've asked for more money, and this time they said, you must lend it out. And by the way, I'm going to go out on a limb and promote another podcast. It's the Planet Money Podcast. They have this indicator that they like to talk to, which is the TED spread, which is basically a measure of the economy's faith in itself. And the lower the number, the better. And I saw yesterday
right.
that the TED spread was down to 1.04. During the peak of this, it had been about 4.5. If it gets below 1, it's back almost to where it should be. And it's a really, really good sign
right.
that the TED spread is as low as 1.04. And I think it has to do with
wow.
the fact that
interesting.
The Congress has insisted that the next $350 billion be loaned out. Yeah,
actually gets to the people. Yeah. Well, listen, our time is almost up, but I do have a what's bugging.
Yeah, I got a what's bugging, Max, too, but I forgot it. So go ahead.
All right. Well, maybe mine will.
Well, I'm
spark
I'm
your
interested already,
spark
but it may
idea.
Jog my memory.
All right. Well, this past week, Ricky Henderson was voted
yeah.
into the Hall of Fame. Okay.
Yep.
Obvious first ballot Hall of Famer. It would be difficult to argue that he is not
right.
the best leadoff hitter of all times. 3,000 hits, 1,400 stolen bases, 2,100 walks, scored 2,300 runs. Into his 40s, he was still a leadoff batter. Just an amazing, you know, amazing performance.
Productive Major League Baseball player.
Right. Fits all
well,
the criteria of Hall of Fame.
One of my theories
is
in making the Hall of Fame is if you own any major category, you're automatically in. And
he certainly does.
Well, wait a minute.
Runs,
let me
pick
this
I mean,
a
he owns
bit.
Them all.
My old friend Tom used to say that he thought the most overrated stat that he'd ever heard was home runs by a leadoff hitter. Why not home runs by somebody who
right.
bats eighth? Why not home runs by the number two hitter? He hit home runs. How many
right.
home runs did he hit? That's what's important, not the fact that he batted leadoff.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I do think that psychologically, if you're leading off in the top of the first inning and you hit a leadoff home run and put the other team in a hole, then you've created something. And I think that that goes beyond being the number eight hitter who hits a home run or the number seven hitter or the number nine hitter.
Yeah.
But anyway, what's bugging me about this is the fact that there were 539
right.
voters in this year's Hall of Fame voting. 511 of them voted for Ricky Henderson, which means 28 voters did not vote.
And now I'm
going to
surprise you.
Ricky Henderson being in the Hall of
Fame. I'm going to surprise you.
And I think that is
I am wholly enthusiastic about that result.
I think that that's horrible. I think that if you were one of the 28 people who didn't vote for him, you should have your baseball writer's card taken from you. Because there is no reason not to vote for him. You cannot say to me that he was not a dominant figure in baseball during his baseball time. You cannot say to me that I don't vote for people their first year. You cannot say to me he did not deserve to go into the Hall of Fame.
He owns a major category.
Say.
Somebody is going to be the first unanimous Hall of Famer. It shouldn't be Ricky Henderson. What I would like to... What I would like to know is how they decide amongst themselves who's going to be the guy to keep this guy from being the first unanimous Hall of Famer. Clearly, Ricky Henderson is a Hall of Famer. There's no question. I knew years ago that he was going to be, and he was going to be first ballot. Should he be the first guy in history, compared with some of the names, to get every vote? Nah, he's Ricky Henderson. He's a schmutz.
I don't think that should even enter into the discussion. I mean, you know, Tom Seaver only got 98% of the vote.
Yeah, but Tom Seaver
was a dick. This is 94%. Tom Seaver got 98% of the vote. Again, absolutely not matter at one bit. Those 28 writers should all have their cards revoked, and they should not be allowed to, not only should they not be allowed to write about baseball, they should not be allowed to talk about baseball either.
I'm really glad that
they should go into a baseball-less life for, as a penalty, for like 2 or 3 years.
One of my memories of Ricky Henderson,
I think that's what they should do,
is the day he broke the record. It was against the Yankees, by the way. He was with Oakland. For the most stolen bases in a career. And he stopped after he stole third. Stole it off of Matt Noakes, as I recall. And he picked up the base, and he held it up in the air. And somebody, I think, stuck a microphone in his face. And he said, "I am the greatest." That same day, on SportsCenter, you could see Nolan Ryan being interviewed about having pitched his 7th career no-hitter. And he thanked his teammates. That's all I got to say about Ricky Henderson and 28 votes short of the
first
perfect
All I can say is that you don't like Tiger Woods. You probably don't like Muhammad Ali because he said he was the greatest, too.
I hated Muhammad Ali.
You see what I mean? I detect a pattern.
Yeah, it's arrogant athletes.
No, it's...
Who should be the first unanimous Hall of Famer?
You root for the underdog. That's your problem. You root for the underdog.
Oh,
that's
I
your
do.
Problem.
Who should be the first unanimous Hall of Famer?
That's why you're a New York Islander. That's why you like, you know, I mean, there's no, except the only thing that doesn't make sense is you like the Yankees.
Yeah, well.
After everything else is said and
done. Well, the other thing that the other trait that stands me in good stead is loyalty. And my dad was a Yankee fan, and he raised me to be a Yankee fan, and I'm a Yankee fan. Not because they're the greatest. In fact, when I became a Yankee fan, they were one of the worst.
Right.
I remember Horace Clark and Jerry Kenny turning double plays.
Not too many of them.
I can tell you with relative certainty that Horace Clark's career batting average was somewhere in the area of .268. You know. This is not Robinson Cano. It's not even Willie Randolph. They were not that good. My favorite Yankee for a long time was Roy White.
Dooley Womack.
Of course, Roy White was a pretty good player. But anyway, I want the first unanimous Hall of Famer to be a spectacularly great player and a spectacularly great guy.
Well, look, if Babe Ruth couldn't get in unanimously, then nobody's going to get
in
unanimously.
Well, and this is my problem. You've just made my argument.
Well, I'm not saying that I expected him to be unanimous. I'm just saying that the 28 who didn't vote for him should be penalized for not.
Well, I think all of them, all of the 28, felt the tradition of not bringing in a unanimous vote. Look at some of the other players, including Lou Brock. And Jim Rice and Mike Schmidt and, you know, on and on and on. Great players. So who's going to tell me Mike Schmidt is not a Hall of Famer with more home runs than any third baseman ever?
Right.
And gold gloves out the kazoo.
Well, part of the reason that I have issues with this is because I did read an article about one of the guys who did not vote for Ricky Henderson.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And his Hall of Fame ballot included Tim Raines, who many people would consider to be possibly the second best leadoff hitter of all times, but an obvious step below
clearly
Ricky Henderson. He also said in an article, he's a baseball writer, obviously. He also said in a recent article that he could not vote ever for Mark McGwire because of questions about whether or not
he took performance-enhancing drugs.
Right. But he said that he would have voted for maybe Matt Williams, whose name came up in the steroid report that was just done.
Hmm.
And so it's the wild inconsistency of something like that. It's somebody standing on a platform that's rickety and falling apart.
Yeah, I'll concede this much. What that guy said makes no sense.
If you can vote for Tim Raines and don't vote for Ricky Henderson, you should have your card taken away.
Well, you're lying.
Right.
You are lying.
Right.
You know, Ricky Henderson was the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, the greatest stolen base player of all time. He got a tremendous amount, over 2,000 career walks.
Yep.
You know how rare that is?
2,200. Yeah.
Yeah, a hugely effective player. And there's no way to measure what he did to benefit the hitters that followed him in the order.
Right.
But I know Don Mattingly won his MVP while Ricky Henderson was batting in front of him.
Right.
Incredibly, incredibly effective baseball player.
Well, that's what's bugging me.
We're way over, but that's all right. We've been gone a while, and we're back.
Right.
Welcome back, Penguin. We need to talk about the boat, maybe.
Oh, yeah, sure. We could do a little boat talk, vacation talk. Well, listen, have a good night.
Yeah, you have a good night.
And I'm sure that we will talk again soon.
From a primitive ancestry, which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck-free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason R.